Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? Yeah, not great for our already struggling environment. That's why I'm so excited to talk about our partner today, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. And the concept is pretty simple. You just fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. I literally just tried out the laundry tablet, and instead of having to bring my huge container like I normally do down the hall, I just brought the one tablet and my clothes came out so clean, just as clean as normal. I'm fully on board. It just makes my life easier and I'm helping the environment. And the best part, Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dateable. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dateable for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dateable to get 15% off.
The Dateable podcast is an insider's look into modern dating that the Huffington Post calls one of the top 10 podcasts about love and sex. On each episode, we'll talk to real daters about everything from sex parties to sex droughts, date fails to diaper fetishes, and first moves to first loves. I'm your host, Yue Xu, former dating coach turned dating sociologist. You'll also hear from my co-host and producer, Julie Krafchik, as we explore this crazy dateable world.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Dateable Podcast, a show where it is our mission to, if you can recite it with us, you've heard this many times,
to dig into the whys.
The whys and whys of people's behavior so we can figure out how to cope and deal and thrive through it all. How about that?
I just envisioned our audience just being like, why? <And they're- laughs>
And then we're like, how? Yeah, it's been a fun adventure to do this show. And we always like to talk about the topic of sexuality because it is, I think the topic is fluid in itself and it changes from year to year. And I feel like this term pansexual has been thrown around in the last few years. And Julie and I have really wanted to dig into what it means to be pansexual and why the future may be pansexual.
So is pansexual. And I'm up for debate, but yes.
Up for debate because we're not psychic. But from what we've seen, the evidence points that way. And our guest today definitely proves that as well.
Yeah. Well, I think if you look at the younger generations, it's definitely starting to trend that way, which is why I think the future may be pansexual because, you know, just really like for anyone that is unfamiliar with the term, we're going to dive into it in much more depth. But the idea is that you don't view sex, like you don't view sex and gender, like you view people as people and you fall in love with the person or you're attracted to the person, not because they're a man, not because of they're a woman. So it's a little different than bisexuality because in that case, you actually are thinking that there are two defined genders, right, in bisexuality because mm-hmm. you're attracted to both. Where in pansexuality, you're not thinking that way and it's all about the person.
You lead with your humanity. You mm-hmm. lead with heart. And I think something we've seen in the past is identity is so core to who we are. At the same time, it is so restricting at the same mm-hmm. time. So when we think about our identity, sometimes we feel like we have to act a certain way or do things a certain way just to fulfill what our identity is. But the beauty of pansexuality is that you're not boxed into one identity. So you can have the freedom to lead with your heart.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of celebrities that are coming out as pan. That's the thing. Like Miley Cyrus, Demi Lovato. Those are a few that like come to mind that I think of that are like more in front of this pan movement.
It's a thing. It's a trend. And it's cool and hip and it's more mainstream, but we know it's been around forever. It's just now celebrities are getting a hold of it and they're like, ooh, that's what I've been experiencing this whole time. When you can put a label on it mm-hmm. and validate it in society, that's when when people can openly talk about it. But you know, it's been around for so long.
Yeah, I think the real when it really becomes the future is when it's not a trend anymore.
Yeah.
When this is just... Every day, you know, like heterosexuality, or I feel like even homosexuality, the way it's perceived now versus probably, you know, 20, 30 years ago was maybe seen more as a quote unquote trend. And now it's very like proven this is here to stay. This is a way that people love. And I think pansexuality is in the same boat.
How exciting. How exciting to have the freedom to love people for who they are and not because of their identity and not because you have to identify with a certain label. It is so liberating to know that that is the future. I'm excited for our future non-existent kids.
They can be whoever they want to be. They can love whoever they want to love. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, not be boxed in. It's so wonderful. I mean, I remember the problems I faced in high school, and I think a lot of people can resonate with this, is battling with your identity, wanting to be the homecoming queen. I don't know why. Why is that even a thing? Wanting to have a boyfriend. Why is that such a thing? Why is that so cool? And now with kids that I talk to who are in high school, those are the least of their worries. They're worries about connection. They're all about in real life get-togethers. They're worried about COVID. You know, there's just bigger things than who's homecoming queen. Like, fuck that. It's nothing anymore.
It's kind of liberating, you know?
It's so liberating.
Okay, while we're on the topic of bad teen years, did you see the updated version of She's All That? It's He's All That?
He's All That. I have not watched it, but I saw a preview for it, and I thought, wow, that's...
I watched it. It's with Addison Rae, the TikTok star, which says so much. She actually did a better job than I was expecting. And I texted my boyfriend. I'm like, I'm really embarrassed that I'm watching this right now. And then he proceeded to watch it.
Was it good?
It was sentimental because I love that movie growing up. Like, it reminds me of teenage years, which the way that movies depict teenage years, I don't know, maybe if you went to school in California, I went to school on the East Coast. I feel like I never saw an outdoor school, yet every movie depicts high school as like this outdoor campus. I don't know. But yeah, I think She's All That brought back, like with Freddie Prinze Jr., the original, was definitely one of those movies that I can think of. There's sentimental value, and I think that's what drew me to it. And actually, the lead in it, it took me a little while to realize this. The girl that they transformed, she's the mother in this one. She's back. And Matthew Lillard's like the principal of the school.
My gosh. Because they're all old as fuck now. I mean, Freddie Prinze Jr., I wish he made a cameo.
He's like, no, nope, like, nope.
I think he's like 45 or something.
He's done. He's done.
Is he still married to Sarah Michelle Gellar? Now I'm thinking about it.
Who knows? They've fallen off the universe. They're pansexual now. No, they're pansexual. Yeah. I just made that up. Let's not start rumors.
That's how rumors
start. They're now on the Wikipedia list of pansexual,
pansexual
people.
Celebrities.
For anyone curious, there is a Wikipedia list of pansexual celebrities. That's how you know it's up and coming, trendy, because I'm pretty sure there's no like list of, well, maybe there's a list of gay celebrities. I shouldn't say that. I've never Googled it.
But somewhere Sarah Michelle Gellar is at her kitchen looking up the list of pansexual celebrities, sees her husband, and stops in her tracks.
The rumors all from Dateable. This is where it happened.
What the fuck, babe? When did you become pansexual and didn't tell me?
This is clearly what's happening at the Prinze Gellar home.
But that movie, I loved that movie as well, Julie. And then now when I rewatch that movie, it is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Oh,
yeah. Well, this one is so ridiculous because it's all about influencer culture. That's how they've like redone it. You got to watch it. Okay. You got to watch it. Check back in. We could regroup on it. But
is there a whole makeover scene? Because that's always my favorite.
Yeah. But it's the guy. They've reversed genders, which is kind of, you know, up and coming.
Did he take off his glasses and he's super hot? I mean, that's like that's in every movie.
You know, he should have been pansexual. That's they kind of dropped the ball on that one. It was a little too heteronormative. There was a lesbian couple, though, so they brought some in.
It would be They Are All That. That would be the next rendition.
That's what they should do. Yep, there we go. In 5 more years, that will come out.
Well, I'm excited to watch that movie. That's going to be on my list. I have a whole list of movies I'm embarrassed to watch around other people. So I'm just going to watch them on my own.
Yeah,
I'm adding that to my list.
Love it. Well, it was so nice to see you this week. UA and I got to celebrate, which was super fun. And yeah, I think... We deserved it.
It kind of reminds me of, because I was looking through some of our older dateable photos, and we used to be together all the time for our recordings. And I kind of forgot about those days. I forgot what it's like to have people around, you know, in my apartment, and we're sitting around on my floor because I didn't have enough furniture for everyone to sit on. And it was just so fun. It felt like a slumber party or something. And it was so great to be in Julie's apartment because she's got a new apartment. It is gorgeous. It was so beautiful to be in there. And we also took our call in there with our new Finding Your Person program cohort. So that was our first live call. We met some of the people who are in the program, and it's just a really great time to connect together.
Yep. Probably about like half of them were on the call, which was pretty cool to see people. It's always really fun to like meet people. I know it's virtual, but I just feel like you're actually meeting people.
Something about the virtual, I think that day, that night when we did our call, Julie really set the tone for the rest of the night because we just felt so warm and, I don't know, ready to be social. So we went to dinner, and this old couple next to us was very friendly, and they were giving us recommendations on which menu to choose. But turns out their story is so great because they definitely look like they were madly in love, right?
Uh-huh. And they were probably in their
70s?
70s.
Yeah. I want to say 70s.
Yeah.
And they've been married for a long time. So we were kind of asking what's a secret to such a long marriage.
Well, they asked us what we were celebrating, and we told them we had a dating podcast. So that's how it kind of got kicked off too.
And people always take that as a jumping off point for their love stories, right?
Yep.
They're like, oh, you do a dating podcast? Let me tell you about my love story.
And we always ask a little too, because we're just inherently nosy.
So. Very, very. And her answer was the best. She said, the secret is you got to get through two other marriages first.
Well, what was so great about their story is they knew each other in middle school, they said?
Yeah, like they met growing when she was 12.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then they went their separate paths. I think she said that she was she lived abroad for a while.
Was married.
And he was in Santa Barbara, so that they live there now. And they were just up for the week visiting San Francisco. And he had lived in Santa Barbara basically his whole adult life. And she had, you know, traveled all around and then was brought back there, and their paths crossed later in life when they were both in different life stages. They'd, you know, come out of divorces with other people, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, that, you know, I feel like I do strongly believe that like things work out for the right reason and people are brought together for a reason. So the fact that like their paths crossed all these years later, maybe they weren't ready to be together when mm-hmm. they first, like they had these lives that they had to live before they could be together. It kind of reminds me of like even you and your partner, Yue, that mm-hmm. you knew each other years and years before you met, but you kind of needed to grow as individuals and go through your own respective life experiences before you found each other.
And that's why we should stop putting so much pressure on the forever. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. You don't know how your life phases will pan out, but you do know this question of how do you know you found your person? You found your person when you feel like you found your person for right now, for who you are today, where your life is at, and it's a fit for you. Stop putting so much pressure on what the future is, mm-hmm. because there is a chance that in our lifetime, we find many of our persons, and that's okay too. And we shouldn't feel guilty about that or feel fear around that. The fact that they've re-met later in life and their kids kind of grew up together, such a beautiful love story, but it's not a love story you hear on, you know, these TV shows or mm-hmm. in these rom-com movies, because these movies don't sell. But we know that this is reality. This is life.
Mm-hmm. There was a really good question on our first call that we had that was all about with Finding Your Person program. It's how do you, you know, stay, like appreciate the process and not stay too fixated on the goal. Like every person you meet are like, is this my person? Is this my person? Is this my person? And I think we, you know, the way that we brought this up was I definitely went through this when I kind of was looking, and I was, I think inherently, even if you're not like, you know, quote unquote looking all the time, you're always wondering a little, is this someone that can develop into more?
Of course.
And I think the reality is that maybe it does push you actually to like give a little more and take chances. And like you said, we never know what the future has in store fully. There's some things, especially like as you get to know someone, you may uncover new things. And some of them may draw you closer to them. And some of them might be things that are deal breakers. And some of those are really apparent right away. And some of them take time to unfold. And I think that's okay. Like, I think that it's, you know, maybe it's not realistic to say, like, I found my person right away. Like, I think you can have an inkling that you found your person. But I do think a lot of times it does take time to develop and see, you know, if this is a fit for the long haul. And that stuff you just can't get from like date one or two all the time.
Yeah. And then ultimately, maybe in 50 years, you look at the person who's been there all along since you were 12 years old and you have this wake up call and think, ah, this is my person.
Yeah.
I've come full circle. I do have a theory, Julie, that people do come full circle in life. I've seen this happen quite a bit where you basically end up with the person either you first had a connection with or someone who resembles the person you first had a connection with.
Interesting. You definitely feel that way, right? About your partner.
Absolutely. And we were at a birthday party a few weeks ago, and we were sitting at a table with a bunch of couples who experienced the same thing. They all went to the same college, did not date in college, knew about each other, and then had a connection in college, but didn't pursue it. And then like 20 years later, got together. There's something about this full circle, because when you meet someone earlier in life, you don't know what you're missing out on yet. So you almost have to explore all of your options to know what you have is the right thing for you.
Yeah, I think some people that can be the case for sure. I don't know if it's everyone, though. Like, I don't know if that actually is how I operate as much. Like, I think for me, what I've experienced is every person builds on the next person, because I've gotten like more confident and I've gotten more clear about what I need in a partner. So I don't know if I would necessarily want to go full circle to who I first had that connection with, because I don't know if that's who I would be attracted to today. I think I've just had so much growth over the years that what I'm looking for in a person completely changed. So I think it can be either or. We talk about this too a lot. It's like sometimes people's problem is they're not living the life that, you know, like they're kind of holding back and waiting for a partner. And then other people are just way too independent. So I think some of it is knowing yourself too, because I think a lot of times we can be on two ends of the spectrum. And usually it's like somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot.
Finding that sweet spot. That'll be our next program. Finding your sweet spot. Now you found your person. We're going to help you find your sweet spot. Should we get us to our question?
Let's do it.
Which is related to pansexuality. One of our listeners wrote in and said, I am in my 30s and am now starting to explore my sexuality. In high school, I had always been interested in men. And then in college, I started being a little bit interested in women. And now I kind of feel like I could be interested in anybody who makes my heart sing. Do you think it's too late to explore your sexuality in your 30s? And if it's not too late, how and where do you even start?
I don't think it's ever too late.
No, no. We know people who explore their sexuality in their 60s, and that is okay. That just means you are finally ready to do so. So I agree. It's never too late. So, but where do you start?
You know, that is a tough question. I do think there are like a lot of communities that exist out there. So I think that could be a place to start. Like, I know it's a little bit different question, but like the poly community, for example, exists. So I know people that were interested in polyamory were able to, you know, find communities and talk to people and hear their stories. So I think hearing other people's stories, I think hearing people's stories is a really good way to just feel like you're not alone in this, and to understand that other people have gone through something very similar. So that could be, you know, finding podcasts that support it. It could be finding IRL people that you actually talk to and meet up with. I shouldn't even say IRL. It could be online too, but communities of people. I think that's super important. Just any education, and then really probably like you have to try things too, like go on those dates and just see how it's feeling and be upfront with it. We talk about this on the episode. We've talked about it in other ones. Sometimes it's okay to even say like, this is my first date coming out of this. And then you might weed out people that maybe don't want to be like as experiential, but then there'll be some that are open to that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think one good idea maybe is to put it in your dating profile that you're exploring. Mm-hmm. You're in a stage of being open-minded and finding anybody who, like you said, makes your heart sing. And I think that in turn will draw in the people who are also in that exploratory mm-hmm. stage. Second piece of advice, listen to this episode because this is exactly what our guest went through. She had one identity in mind and she ended up breaking free of all identities mm-hmm. and just went with her heart. So keeping that open mind and listening to all of everyone else's journey stories will really help you through this too. But know that it is totally fine to start in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s. It does not matter your age as long as you feel like you're open and ready to do so.
I think it's okay also to come back to where you started. We had a past guest, Margot, from season 7. It was a while ago. And we had her on for part one. She was talking about like frustrations with dating as a heterosexual female. And then one of our mutual friends asked if we had talked to her recently. This was months that went mm-hmm. by. She was now in a relationship with a woman. So we had her back. And even in this exploration phase, she had gone on a date with a couple. She had done a bunch of different things that were outside of her comfort zone just to get to know herself better, get to know her sexuality better. And now she's gone back to dating men. And I think that's okay. Like, that's totally okay. Mm-hmm. Because I would personally rather, like, if I had the questioning, I'd rather figure out what's right for me, even if it means that the stuff in the short term ended up not being right. Then you can say, I'm good with my situation. I've explored others and I know now this is what suits me.
Yes. Just don't get stuck in an identity. That's it. Okay.
Cool. Okay, so some announcements this week. The typical, join Love in the Time of Corona Facebook group by the Dateable Podcast. That's the public group. That's where people, you know, post questions and community members will chime in and really support each other along this dating journey. Always amazed by the questions in there. And then the Sounding Board is our premium community where we have these virtual events. We're calling them the weekly sound-offs. We have office hours with UA and I, with the weekly sound offs. We have our host team lead discussion, like topic based discussions. We've had ones about like the decision to have children or not. We had fear of dating again and how to overcome it. We've had all sorts of different topics that really resonated with folks. And it's a really great way for people to kind of, you know, get things out. You and I were talking about this. I think part of our journey that's been helped us so much is that we've been able to talk it out along mm-hmm. the last 5 years. And in a way, the sounding board kind of provides you that experience to talk it out with your fellow sounding board members, and then also ask us questions too in the monthly group chat that we have, the coffee chat. That's a live call with the two of us. So if you're interested in that, go to datablepodcast.com/soundingboard.
And if you are really enjoying our conversations in this podcast, do your friend a favor and send them a link because we find that that is some of the best ways for friendships to blossom. We've seen so many people say, oh, I got closer to my friend because I sent her this episode about relationships. Do you really want one? And now we talk about it all the time. Because I think listening to these episodes, even for us, Julie and I, we have these topics that every time we come together, we're like, well, let's talk about that last episode. That was, what did you think about it? And it just, I think hearing all the different perspectives brings you closer together as friends too. Yeah, send them a link.
It's the modern day book club. I feel like book clubs never work out, at least the book clubs I were in, because reading a book is a lot of effort and no one ever was on the same schedule with each other. And it would end up just being let's get together and drink wine night instead. But listening to a podcast is so low investment. You could do it on a walk. It's usually an hour, hour and a half max. There's so many ways that this can be the new book club.
Yes. Yes, for sure. I want to give a quick shout out to Alice, who I met randomly this week, who happens to be a listener and also part of our Finding Your Person program. So I thought serendipity mm-hmm. brought us together. And I just want to say, hello, Alice. Thanks for listening.
I love it. I always love when we randomly meet listeners. It's always super fun. So keep it coming. You know, it does always prove that we're always a couple layers separated from people too. Even, you know, in our Facebook groups, mm-hmm. we're able to see mutual friends. And there were some people that I saw in our Facebook group, in the Finding Your Person group, that I had mutual friends with. And there are people I haven't talked to in years
wow.
that live across the country. So it's not that they heard about the podcast through this person, probably.
Right, right.
But it just shows that everyone has some connection. There's always the 6 degrees of separation, right? 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but 6 degrees of Dateable Podcast.
I don't think we can mention Kevin Bacon's name anymore. I think he's banned. So 6 degrees of Dateable. We can call
yep.
it 6 degrees.
That's
of
the new thing. Okay, let's go into a few quick messages from our sponsors.
Support for Dateable is brought to you by Incipio. Incipio offers legendary protection for all of your devices, from phones to AirPods to tablets. They obsess over their tech to protect yours. It's like Incipio's line of products was made for me, because with their phone cases, my phone is protected from drops as high as 14 feet. The cases are also wireless charging compatible, and there's a lifetime warranty. So they've got you covered. I have the Organic Core Clear Case, which is made up of 100% compostable materials that reduces landfill waste by naturally re-entering the environment from where it started. All of the packaging is made out of 100% recyclable materials with eco-friendly water-based ink. Now, for Dateable listeners only, we have a special offer. These incredible cases are now available for purchase at incipio.com, and you can use the code Dateable for 20% off. That's INCIPIO.com, and use the code DATEABLE for 20% off. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It is no surprise, Julie and I are huge fans of therapy, especially online therapy, and BetterHelp can do exactly just that. They match you with your own licensed therapist and connect you in a safe and private online environment. I was able to start communicating with my therapist in less than 48 hours, super fast. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. Their licensed professionals specialize in everything from stress management, anxiety, trauma, dating, and grief. We at Dateable wish for all of you to live a happier, more wholesome life, and we think therapy and prioritizing your mental health will accomplish that. So as our listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/dateable. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/DATEABLE.
Okay, let's take it away with Genesis, all about the future is pansexual.
Sexuality. Wow. We love this topic because we meet people from all walks of life who have their own experiences with sexuality, sexual preferences, and identity is a very fascinating aspect of all of that. So our guest today, Genesis, she identified as bi in high school, then she identified as a lesbian, and now she's married to a straight male. It's quite the journey we want to get into.
Yes, and you identify now as pansexual. I think the future is pansexual, so can't wait to dive in there with you.
For sure. Genesis, who is Genesis? She is 32 years old. She lives in Walnut Creek. She's been there for 3 years, but she is originally from Mexico City. She's in a monogamous relationship, obviously. And I shouldn't say obviously. She is in a monogamous marriage.
Yeah, there are poly marriages,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're pansexual, people can assume, right?
I can't say obviously at all anymore. And, you know, this is going to be really about your journey, and we can't wait to learn more about you. Great. But I want to start in high school, because you say you came out as bi in high school. How did you come upon that? And then how were you able to come out?
Yeah, you know, it started with just seeing other women that didn't look very feminine like I was used to. You know, a woman with short hair walking down the street, or, you know, being at the mall and a woman who had, you know, like spiky hair and kind of was wearing what I thought to be men's clothing. And so I kind of just started noticing that and was like intrigued, like, oh, I like that. I like that. And then it kind of grew to like being attracted to women that I assumed were lesbians, who I assumed were mm-hmm. also into other women based off of their looks. You know, I'm 15, 16 at the time, so I didn't really have any other base of what sexuality looked like other than straight girls.
So then you identified as bisexual at this point. Like, what brought you to identify as being a full-on lesbian?
Yeah, well, it started as bi just because I feel like, at least for me, and I know some other lesbians probably experienced this, but for me, it was just like an easy kind of avenue to start with. Like, okay, you know, I have dated men, so I know I like men, but now I'm obviously also interested in this other factor of women. So the only clear assumption is bi. So that's kind of like the first baby step of like sexuality. At least it was for me.
And when did you start identifying as a lesbian?
Probably not until middle of college when I had a serious relationship with a woman.
Mm. So you're exclusively dating women at this point?
Yes. Yes. In my early, gosh, not even early, like 20. I was turning 20. Entered into a serious relationship with a woman. We ended up dating for 5 years, but it was, you know, we lived together. We, you know, did the whole shebang. We were very committed and in love. And so that's when I was like, okay, if I can have this serious relationship with a woman, maybe I'm not bi. It's just, yeah, I'm a lesbian now. This is my life. I'm going to marry a woman.
So was she your first like serious relationship, or had you had them with men before or other women?
I had a boyfriend in high school, which was very tumultuous, just like the very typical Romeo and Juliet, like screaming at each other, but then we're in love. So it was like just the
also high school. So
yeah. Just high school. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like dating before like your 20s, you know, like doesn't even count.
Man or woman, like doesn't matter. Yes.
Exactly. Okay, so first like adult relationship with this woman. And then what about post-term? Was it your husband or were there other people in the mix?
Immediately after, it was strictly women. Because again, I was like, I'm a lesbian, I'm dating women. So I was, you know, on the apps looking for only women and women who identified as lesbians specifically. And so I was just dating very casually, nothing very serious. And then slowly, I don't actually even know if I can pinpoint a moment, but it was just, I very slowly started to also open my mind back up to men again.
And I don't
know why that was. I think maybe, but I never went back to being bi. I was just like, I'm a lesbian, but I'm also still kind of intrigued with men. We'll see where this goes.
Had you slept with men, like your high school boyfriend? Did you sleep with him?
I did, yes.
Okay, so you had slept with men and women at this point.
Yes, both. Yeah.
So you were a curious lesbian. Like curious, I guess so. About men. That is so interesting. And okay, so you started opening yourself up to men, and then something happened.
Yeah, but you know, I was actually a little bit upset with myself about it, because it was almost like a re-confusion. Because when I first came out in high school, I was very sad about it. Like I was crying, I was journaling. I was like, what's happening? What's going on? And what I presented to the world was very confident. I never was somebody that was like lying about it or shying away from it. I kind of faced it head on, but it was still very confusing. So then when it happened again, it was also like, oh my gosh, what's going on now? Like, why can't I identify myself? Why can't I pinpoint who I am? And so, yeah, so that was kind of like another hurdle to kind of like, I don't know, overcome my sexuality.
That just begs the question, why do we have to identify? Right? Exactly. That seems to be the stress that we often face, is I have to be this one identity and I got to live up to this identity. That's what my external facing identity is. But why do we need to be boxed in like that? That's just like a very great way of talking about sexuality, because it doesn't need to be so black and white in this scenario. And then how did you meet your husband?
Yeah. So I actually met him through a mutual friend at a house party. We met, it was a hi, how are you? Nice to meet you, you know, and we went on with our lives. And then we met again 6 months later through the same friend at a like film screening in LA, actually.
Oh.
And then we started talking at the bar, and I am a lucid dreamer, and he was asking about my dreams. So we kind of just started talking about lucid dreaming. And then through those conversations, I kind of just was like, okay, he's kind of cute. He's very nice. Not what I don't know. I dated a lot of crappy men as well. So, and he wasn't that. He was very kind, was a good listener. He actually reminded me of a lot of women I dated, which is kind of weird.
Wow. No, I kind of know what you mean though. Like there's certain men that have more, I don't want to say feminine qualities, because it's not even that, but they just have like more of that in touch with their emotional side. Maybe that's
they have
a good
the soft skills.
Yes. Yeah. Soft skills. I think it's sexy. So it's not like a bad thing.
It's interesting you say the emotional side, because that's exactly, he attributes his emotional side to certain acting programs that he did in LA. Mm. And so he was really able to like get in touch with his emotions and kind of like get to the root of who he was. And that I feel like helped our relationship flourish.
Yeah.
And was he the first man that you had interest in?
Seriously, you know. Yes. Not sexually, but it was more like the first man that I was more emotionally attracted to.
Got it. Okay.
So you said that you dated shitty men. So I know you mentioned the tumultuous high school guy, but were there other guys in the mix?
Yeah. So after my serious girlfriend, there was a couple, not so directly after, it was only women. And then as I got later into my 20s, I kind of opened back up to men. Mm-hmm. And it was very casual. It wasn't anybody that I ever met on dating apps, because dating apps, I was strictly lesbian. So I was only looking for other women. But in person, you know, if I happened to work with somebody, you know, serving at a restaurant, we kind of just, things would happen.
Right. So how old were you then when you met your husband?
27, I think. 20, okay. Yeah, I turned 27.
Did he know that you identified as a lesbian on dating apps?
He knew I identified as a lesbian just in everyday life. I told him very clearly one night after, you know, drinking and having some fun, I said, listen, I'm very much a lesbian, but I don't know what's going on here. I'm open to exploring this with you and I'm just having some fun. And, you know, and he was like, okay, great. So I very much like was like, this isn't going anywhere, buddy. Like, I'm a lesbian. You're just an experiment. And I'm maybe just bored.
So his reaction was like, cool? Or was he a little like, is this, what is this?
Yeah. And actually, maybe that's why I continued to date him, was because he wasn't, you know, a lot of men, when I would tell them, oh, I'm a lesbian, it was like, well, when are we going to have a threesome? Or let me see. Yep. That's hot.
The typical shit. Yep.
And he was the first one that was like, okay, well, when can I see you again? You know, he was very like,
he didn't care.
He didn't care. He was like very respectful about it and didn't ask any questions that were rude or cliche or like stereotypical.
So how did you get to the point then that he wasn't an experiment and he was someone that you were actually pursuing to eventually become your husband?
Yeah, I think it just happened really naturally. And it came through me talking with actually one of my best friends who, you know, was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm a lesbian. I don't know why I'm, you know, I'm dating these other girls kind of casually, but what's going on with this guy? And she was just really motivating and inspiring. And she's like, you know, nothing about you is set in stone. Like, why don't you just explore and see where it goes and give him a chance? He's a kind person. And
very wise words.
Yes. She's a very wise friend. And so I just kind of jumped in, and then it just from there happened very casually. Like I imagine most, you know, relationships happening like that turned to serious. It's just we dated and it got more serious. But it did take some like, you know, soul searching conversations with friends and even with him of like, I'm going to go with this. You know my past now. Like, hopefully you can trust that I'm falling for you, and we'll see where that goes.
Did he have any doubts like at all, or what was he like?
Not that he ever spoke to with me. Maybe he did. I'm not really sure. But, you know, I would always casually ask him, like, would you be more upset if I cheated on you with a guy or with a girl? Like, not that I would ever cheat on you, but, like, if I were to, who would you rather me cheat on? And sometimes his answers were, like, I'd be more upset if you cheated on me with a woman. And I always found that to be interesting. And maybe it's because there's, like, an emotional side there. I'm not really sure. I guess we'd have to ask him.
Yeah, that question's always interesting because I feel like people have just, like, asked that more hypothetically. Yours was a little closer to home. But it's kind of like, oh, this person that's obviously very different than me that I can't, you know, quote unquote, like compete with in any way because it's like apples to oranges. Yeah. Or in your case, like, does this mean they're not attracted to me? You know, that's like the question with that question.
Well, aside from the anatomy between men and women, that those differences. When you started dating your now husband seriously, did it feel much different than dating women seriously?
I mean, aside from the anatomy, aside from, I mean, not, I don't think so. I think like when you're kind of in a serious relationship with somebody, the kind of same things come up, like you're annoyed with each other about the same things, or you you kind of find your own inside jokes. And I think that like if I were to compare my serious relationship with a woman and a serious relationship with a man, at their core, they're usually rooted in love and respect. And then, you know, you can kind of build off of that. But there wasn't much different otherwise. I mean, there are differences like day to day, like women are in general. I think somebody might argue otherwise, but I think women tend to be more intuitive. And so they would like dating women. They were very much more like quick to know when I was in a bad mood or upset about something than a guy.
Could see that.
Things like that. So things like they're kind of those like everyday differences, but at the core, they're very similar, I would say.
What about the stereotypes, like the U-Haul relationship with lesbians that basically like on the second date, they're ready to move in together, or the just like over communicating everything? Like, did you see either of those hold true in any way?
Oh, yeah. The over communicating. Oh, yes. I mean, everything is like a 3-hour conversation. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's great. Like, I enjoyed that. But, you know, if you start fighting at, you know, midnight with a guy, maybe you can stop it by 12:30 with a girl, with a woman. You're up all night.
Still rehashing. You're still talking about your attachment styles.
Oh, my God. What about the moving fast? Did you see a – I mean, I know you're only a sample size of 2 serious relationships, so we're making generalizations here. But
yeah, this is really about yourself. Yeah.
Did you see any difference, or did they move at the same pace, or maybe the guy even faster than the woman? Yeah.
Well, with the woman, it was very fast, like within a few weeks.
Okay.
We were like – it was very quick. But actually also with my current husband, it was 4 months in. So maybe he has some lesbian attributes. I don't know.
4 months in what?
That we moved in with each other.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I thought you meant like 4 months till like you established. I'm like, no, that seems pretty slow, actually. But yes, moving in.
That is pretty fast.
Wait, with your girlfriend, was it like within a month that you moved in, or like within a month?
If anything. Oh, wow.
So that was like a U-Haul too.
Yeah. It definitely was.
So you just moved fast in general, but she was a little faster.
Yes. She was a little faster, and he was pretty fast too. Yeah.
Was your family aware of kind of your journey and experiences?
They were. And one of my biggest fears with my family was, you know, I did come out to my family in high school. And then again, when I was seriously dating a woman, I was like, you know, I'm in a serious relationship now. I identify as a lesbian. This is me. And my mom took it okay. She was a little bit like, needing to process it more so than my stepdad at the time. He was like, that's great, Jen. Like, great. Like, whoever you're with is fine as long as you're happy, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. So they definitely knew. I think when it came to like family, friends, and like family that was not immediate, I got, you know, cause some odd questions or some things like people would say, oh, well, you know, I knew it was just a phase.
Yeah.
Or things
yeah,
like
I
that.
I see them say that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I still actually fear that. Like if they see, you know, see me settle down with a man, they still like think, oh, Genesis had that lesbian phase when nothing was ever a phase for me.
Right. Like you have like, you know, the husband and baby now. You're living like the quote unquote traditional lifestyle, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing I definitely struggle with too, you know, as a feminist, like, oh, great. I'm living out the very traditional life.
Yeah.
How can I kind of combat that a little bit?
I totally have that fear a bit too. It's like sometimes you're like, I want to be progressive, but then sometimes you also want the traditional things. And it's like, am I caving in or something?
Well, you're kind of anything but traditional, I feel like, for your transformations. I think the stories we've been hearing on our show are the exact opposite. Straight identifying women who fell in love with women and then leaving their husbands or boyfriends for women. You've gone, I wouldn't even say you went full circle. You landed where you are today. It's not even where you started. So I think it's anything but traditional, but I get it because if anybody saw you in this moment in time, the picture you're painting is very traditional, but they have no idea what you went through to get to where you are today. So that's really, really, really interesting. I love that. Yeah. So let's talk about what is it about your current husband that you felt like, this is it. I want to spend my life with this person and also have a kid with this person.
Yeah. You know, I think, again, he's so kind. Like, he's so kind to everybody he meets. He's so respectful. I mean, even little things like being kind to your server or to strangers on the street, like, and to genuinely want to help people. That was such a big one for me, because the world is crazy and people are mean to each other. And so if you can find somebody that's genuinely kind to themselves and the people around them, I feel like that's, for me, so important. So I would say kindness. And then also respect. I would say a lot of relationships I were like casual relationships and also serious ones, they kind of had a core of being disrespectful, like reading somebody's journals or just like calling them when you know they're working and picking a fight. Like genuine things that are just not respectful to the other person was something that I was just not going to settle for.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and so my current husband would never, he's just so respectful.
Well, I think that's the whole bit about pansexual, right? It's all about the person that you're falling for, not the sexuality. Can you kind of go in a little deeper of like why you identified as pansexual opposed to bisexual and what this whole, like, you know, all your experiences did for you in terms of identity? I know that's a loaded question, but
No, I can answer it the best that I can. So I'm also, I'm in grad school for philosophy. And there's a lot of philosophies around gender and sexuality. And kind of going back to, Yue, what you said about, you know, the kind of black and whiteness of sexuality. But what we're learning is that sexuality is not a spectrum. It's not like one end you're straight, one end you're gay. It's actually much more complicated than that. It's like a whole universe of identities, of sexualities, genders, all of it. And so there's not kind of like either or. And so for me, as I was kind of like learning this throughout my life of sexuality and gender, because to me, like I could fall in love with somebody who identifies as anything. So I wouldn't want to hinder myself from dating somebody that, you know, might be trans or gender fluid or non-binary. Like I wouldn't shut myself off from any of that, of those identities. And then also with sexuality. So if somebody was bi, I would date them. If they were straight, gay, you know, I would date anybody that also wanted to date me that I was attracted to, of course.
Right, of course, right.
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break to hear some of our messages.
Confession, I have a secret about how I've been able to update my wardrobe with only high quality but affordable pieces these last few years. And now I have to let the secret out because they're sponsoring this episode. It's called Quince. Yeah, if you know, you know. Quince has premium European linen dresses, gorgeous washable silk tops, luxurious cashmere, and the best part, they're priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. So no more middleman, and that's why it costs less to you. I know Julie got herself some nice cashmere pieces, and at only $50 a sweater, come on. And I recently ventured into home goods. I got myself some premium cotton percale sheets, ultra cooling, and just feels like a five-star hotel every night. And it's so perfect for the upcoming hot months. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/dateable for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/dateable to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/dateable. If you're a dog lover or if you have dogs, have you ever wondered why so many dogs are suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more health issues with dogs than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place where we can look to support any dog's health, and that's their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Now, Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And I actually love giving Mojo this as a topper. I feel good that there are no fillers and it's also air dried. So that means it retains more nutrients. Mojo's usually pretty picky about what he eats. So I'm glad that he now enjoys every meal. And now you can treat your dogs to healthy, nutritious food. Go to badlandsfood.com/dateable and order right now to get up to 50% off your first regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BADLANDSfood.com/DATEABLE today. Want relationship advice from one of the leading experts in the field of couples therapy? Then Reimagining Love is for you. Hosted by one of our favorite guests on Dateable, Dr. Alexandra Solomon. She is a clinical psychologist, couples therapist, professor, and award-winning author. It is your destination for profound, enlightening discussions about love, family, intimacy, and everything in between. But more than that, she gives us the opportunity to reimagine ourselves, our relationships, and our world. So on the show, Dr. Alexandra gives in-depth research-backed takes on topics like dating, jealousy, communication, commitment, personal growth, and features notable guests from the worlds of therapy, academia, and pop culture, such as me and Julie from Dateable, among other people you may have heard of like Esther Perel, Susan Cain, and Emily Nagoski. Her podcast is incredible, definitely worth a listen. We loved being on it, and we love having Dr. Alexandra on our show. So you can find her podcast, Reimagining Love, wherever you get your podcasts. And is your husband, has he always been straight identifying?
Yes.
And then in this current, in your marriage, he also identifies as a straight male. So, yes. Right. Okay. Yeah. This identity of discussion is just fascinating. Also, because you had a child, so then your identity shifted after you had a child too. It's like we're never married to our identity because it's constantly changing. So why do we have to pigeonhole ourselves into one?
Yeah.
Now that you identify as pansexual, even when you were identifying as bisexual, what were some of the misconceptions that you were hearing or feedback you were getting from people?
I think the biggest one was always, you know, people want to put you into a box based off of the way that you look very quickly. And, you know, I actually think that that's okay sometimes. Like, as human beings, we kind of have this like constant fight or flight. Like, are you safe for me to be around? Can I kind of like trust you? And, but as we learn these things about each other, we should be able to be more open-minded about that. But I did experience, you know, people being like, oh, well, you don't look bi. You don't look like a lesbian. Uh-huh. You don't have short hair, or you don't walk what I perceive to be masculine. You're not attracted to me, are you? Aren't you hitting on me? I'm a guy, so why aren't you know, whatever it may be. So there was definitely a lot of very physical stereotypes that came along with all different identities that I've experienced.
We had a Pride live stream that we did that we also turned into an episode. And we had a woman that identified as bi, and she said that she was very much monogamous, but everyone would always be like, oh, can we have a threesome? Or I'm afraid that you're going to leave me for this person, or you're going to cheat on me, or you're going to do this at the same time. And she was like, no, I'm still monogamous. Like, have you encountered, I know you mentioned like some guys would throw that line. Like, what was your response when you got stuff like that?
Pretty similar. I'm like, well, my relationship, there's types of relationships, and that's not what I'm talking about, right? It's like, I'm talking about my sexuality, which is not what I believe, you know. I could be lesbian and poly, like be totally open. So I think that there's a difference between monogamy and non-monogamy. So if you're, just because I might be sexually attracted to all sorts of people doesn't mean I want to date them all at the same time. And even if I did, that's also nobody's business. Like, that's something that's like,
right. And then also, it's not, I would assume, I mean, what she brought up too on the live stream, it's like, you're not necessarily attracted to every woman out there. It's like, if you're straight, you're not attracted to everyone of the opposite gender. You have certain people you're attracted to and certain people you're not.
Exactly.
And I'm going to ask you this question. It may be controversial, but I've been asked this question or had this discussion with friends, and they're like, I would never dare to ask this question. So I'm just going to ask it and excuse my ignorance if this comes off wrong. But in, you know, some of my observations of people who are pansexual or homosexual, the roles between two people still fall into heterosexual roles. So you have more of the butch woman with mm-hmm. the feminine woman. And even when you said in the beginning, when in high school, you were attracted to the women who have shorter hair, dress kind of masculine. What would you say to that observation? Because my question is that something that is just we naturally fall into, or is that just something we see more of and we're not seeing more of the other like same gender role couples?
Yeah, you know, I think a big part of it could be like it's socially constructed. So we are used to seeing certain things. And so we act those out. I personally try to kind of explore my more masculine side, even in my straight relationship with a man. So like we would go out, you know, for drinks or a movie and I would put my arm around him.
Yes.
And he really liked that. So I kind of kept doing it. So I kind of like personally tried to explore those within myself mm-hmm. and not being afraid like to be kind of more masculine acting or presenting, even if I was wearing a dress, like I'm going to hold you. I'm going to be the big spoon. I'm going to open the door for you. But that was me personally. I don't know if other people do that, but I like to try and like combat those norms that mm-hmm. we're used to. But I think it's because we're used to seeing it because we've always known that, we've been taught that. So the more that we can kind of challenge that, then the more we might see, you know, things that aren't the norm.
Mm. Well, it's forcing people in a box, like even talking just about straight folks for a second, because I know you were saying, UA, that like people that aren't straight are kind of conforming to that. But mm-hmm. even the people that they're trying to conform to, I feel like that's already putting people in a box. Because even if you're a woman, you have a blend of feminine and masculine traits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're a man, I think that's where so much toxic masculinity comes in, that you feel like less than if you don't exhibit it. We were even talking about earlier, like, you know, about your husband. And I hated using the word like feminine to like describe emotionally available. Like, that's kind of messed up when you think mm-hmm. about it. But why can't a man have those qualities? And I personally am super attracted to those qualities. So mm-hmm. I feel like this is something that like everyone is dealing with, of like, how do we get out of these like boxes? And we're clearly making progress. But in your opinion, like what else can we be doing to kind of fight out of this?
I mean, the biggest thing for me is just having conversations, like yeah. talk about it even with your partner. Like I've even talked about it with my husband, like, hey, do you want, but what if we just do like a fun photo shoot tonight and like I'll wear your clothes and you wear mine? Like, well, that would be fun, right? He's like, great, let's do it. You know, just have those conversations and not being afraid to sound silly or stupid, like, because if somebody is going to make you feel insecure for asking a question and challenging some norms, then maybe you shouldn't be with them.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the more we identify with one identity, the more we crawl into that box and the less we explore everything else that's available to us in this world. And I would also argue that by exploring the feminine, masculine, all of it, these sides of you will also benefit other parts of your life. I think we can bring that into our professional life, can bring that into our personal life. We can bring more creativity, because our brain isn't wired to just think one way. But for some reason, society tends to want us to walk down one aisle and stay there.
That's such an interesting point, UA, too, because I think that does fall into, you know, taking like sexuality out, but even, you know, going from a single person to being in a relationship, that is an identity shift. Mm-hmm. Or going from being like childless to being a mother mm-hmm. or father, like that's a huge identity shift. And I think that in other parts of life, those shifts happen all the time. And there may be a little less, you don't have to like come out and be like, I'm in a relationship now, you know, and do the whole song and dance and tell your parents in like a way that you're, you know, changing gears. Why do we think that that is so accepted, that we go through different stages of life and it's fluid, yet in sexuality, it's so binary? I know we're obviously coming out of that binary, but that's still not the mainstream. What are both of your takes on that?
Gosh, yeah, it is really interesting. Like I said, I think that we want to put some identities on each other for like, actually even for survival reasons of like, you know, if I'm a lesbian, I feel like maybe I have short hair so that I can attract other lesbians. So like, and I put myself into these boxes so that other people might identify me and say, hey, I think I know what's going on here. You're safe for me to kind of like hit on or talk to. And mm-hmm. so there's kind of that side of it. But also I think that people just fear things that they don't know.
Yes.
And I think maybe, I mean, mean, I don't know if like religion has maybe played a role, you know, people being fearful that like something that they've been taught is wrong, that if they explore that, they're going to, you know, go to hell. I mean, it can mm-hmm. get really extreme. And I think that we have to kind of be willing to identify that and shift away from it, because it is killing people. It's not great for our society to thrive in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so with you on that, Genesis. And I do have this hunch that religion is the basis of all of this, because I think at the core of it, it's still about reproduction. And I think society benefits from reproduction because it adds more people into society to help build society and to contribute. So we still have this, we as in society still has this old fashioned notion that you have to be heterosexual in order to reproduce, which is no longer the case, right? So I think it's just so deeply ingrained. I hate to say it, we just need to wait for the older generation to die off, because the younger generation
is on board. Yeah, they're all pan. Everyone's
they
pan.
They are all pan. I was at an art sale with a bunch of high school kids. They created art and they wanted to sell it, and everybody was in high school, and I had no idea who was a man or a woman. Didn't matter. They were all dressed in very, let's just say like clothes that I, you know, not identifying as either gender. And they spoke in a way that was very neutral mm-hmm. and open. I was just floored by how woke these kids were. And I would be like, okay, so where do you have, like, where's the women's section? Because they had some clothes. And they're like, what do you mean women's section?
There is no women's section anymore.
All of it. Yeah. Just go through all the clothes. You can wear all of it. It was wonderful. Eye-opening, and it gives me so much hope.
So do you think the future is pansexual then? Do you think there's still a place for being bi, for instance, or do you think that's going to replace being bi?
I think so. I mean, being bi for me implies that there's only two genders to be attracted to. Mm. And I believe there's many more genders and maybe even more that we don't know about. And so I think being bi is so limiting, at least for me. And so I would hope that the future does move towards more of a pansexual future, because it's just more fun. It's more, you know, it's more open for everybody.
Is there a difference between pansexual and sexually fluid?
I actually don't know. I know pansexual means that you're attracted to all sexualities, all genders specifically. Mm-hmm. So, and you can be emotionally attracted to them, not just sexually.
Oh, so you could be like, I'm emotionally attracted to, but would you still want to date that person if you were just emotionally and not sexually?
I mean, maybe, I think there's some people that date and are just, you know, are asexual, don't have sex right. with each other. So they might want to be emotionally romantic with somebody, but they don't have sex. So I could see that being an option for some people.
Yeah, there's actually a rise in the younger generation too with asexuality, and being mm-hmm. ace, I think, is more socially accepted. Again, like just the opening up to many options and not yes. just falling into the norms of what it is.
Okay, right. So I think, so there's arguments online. They could be the same thing, but it's very nuanced. The difference is sexually fluid means you're attracted to people of multiple genders, but one at a time. Mm. And pansexuality means you're attracted to all genders all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, so like if you're sexually fluid, like you go through a period where you're attracted to men, a period that you're attracted to women. So it's still more about the like putting people into boxes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's more like I am. Yes, I think that's what the internet says. It could be I'm into women right now. And then who knows, tomorrow I could be into men. But it's not, you only have eyes for women today.
Right. We're pansexual. It's like it's all about the person. And that could change by the second, by the hour. You might not even think that they're like identify as a man or a woman, because gender is all fluid right. too.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
But I could be totally wrong. I would love for someone to give me more information on this, because there's a lot of conflicting information.
Yeah. And I know we don't have someone that identifies as a man on this episode right now. So would love to have someone eventually essentially that identifies as pansexual and as a man. But I would like both of your thoughts on this because I have some as well. Maybe younger generations are not thinking this way. But I know like anytime I've had a friend that's like, oh, I'm talking to this guy and oh, he's bi or he's pansexual. And it's seen very differently than women saying that in society as well. There is a lot of like studies and articles of just the response to it. And I think some of that is the sexualization of lesbians versus men that are supposed to be masculine and straight and all that. Supposed to be is not my words. It's society. So I'd love your thoughts on like, why do we think that is the case? And if you've heard similar, that it's been more difficult for men to be pansexual.
Yeah, I think it could totally come from just history and, you know, all of those stereotypes that are put on women and men. I think the sexualization of women is definitely a factor because it's almost easier to accept like, oh, okay, a woman is more, you know, frivolous with her sexuality. Haha, just, you know, she's just an overly sexual woman. Somebody needs to tame her. Whereas like a man, it can be, you know, very scary for other men, for a man to be in touch with sides of himself that other men aren't, and they can feel inferior maybe. But I do think that we've just been taught over time like that, you know, men are unemotional and they're sexual and they, you know, take hold of their women, and women are supposed to be kind of more submissive and are just all around more sexual. Obviously, these aren't true, but this is ingrained, and you can see it in, you know, old Disney movies. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just plays a big part in our kind of ideas about men and women. And so I think that's just made it so hard for men to kind of come out. And
yeah,
you know, again, there's like a lot of violence towards, you know, gay and trans communities. And I think that it would be scary for men to come out, because people don't like it.
And, you know, adding on to that, why is it that we feel we normalize women who tend to be, who have masculine qualities? Because tomboys are cool. Tomboys play sports. Look at them. They're athletes. They're jocks. And even in heterosexual relationships, when you talk about threesome, you always just assume it's two women and one man. And that's cool. Yeah. Two women. It's highly sexualized. It's so hot. Let's do it. But it's never, you would never go to your partner and say, let's have a threesome. And your man's like, yeah, let me bring the other guy. Like that's just very rare.
Although I do know people that have had that happen, but yes,
good for them. I want to meet them because I love that these moments can happen. But we normalize masculine women, but we don't normalize feminine straight men. And even in hetero relationships, I've had girlfriends who say, I'm really trying to encourage my husband to tap into his feminine side, like wear a dress every once in a while, paint your nails, get your nails done, let's get your hair blown out, you need to feel what it feels like so that you get more in touch with that side. But that's only recently. I've never heard that before. So I'm definitely on board with that. I would love to encourage my partner to explore more of the feminine side.
There's still a lot of shame associated
with
that.
For sure.
I think that is where it comes down to. And I think it is the stigmas of the masculinity that we were talking about. But I think that's really difficult for a lot of people like that do actually want that, you know, to come to terms with that, something that's quote unquote normal. And I think that is, I wonder if some of it is like the genitalia, right? Like that's like a lot more, I don't know. It's like there's a soft, like you don't view, when you're thinking of two people having sex, you don't like view women's genitalia as much. At least, I don't know. This is just a hypothesis. Like I feel like you see like there's a stigma, I think, of two men's penises versus two women's vaginas. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I don't know if that's like the right way to say it, but it's more sexually out, you know? Because maybe it's because it's external versus internal.
Yeah. Like it's more in your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I wonder if the porn industry has had some of like an effect here too, you know, of like really putting stereotype onto young boys who watch porn, or and women. But I feel like there's a lot there too that, you know, I don't think I'm qualified to speak to, but I know that there's something there.
I can definitely see that.
We didn't get into it before, but how would you describe like sex being different? Like while we're on that topic, like how would you describe sex being different between, I know, I guess just your sample of the people you've been with.
Genitalia.
Yeah. Like in how detailed shall I get here?
As detailed as you'd like to get.
No, I won't get too detailed, but I think it totally depends on, I think, how close you are to the person. Like it can feel really emotional with women. It can feel just like there's like this sense of closeness that is just really intimate, and like it's very specific to women. There's a softness, there's just like some intuition happening. It's very sensual and very sensitive. Not to say that you can't have that with a man too, and I think that you can if you're very much on the same page, maybe you're in love or just really really communicative with each other. But in general, I think, at least in my experience, some of the men that I had slept with were not wanting to be intuitive, didn't really want to pleasure me, they were just very much focused on themselves. Whereas women, in my experience, were very much wanting to pleasure you, wanting you to feel all of the sensations. And I feel like that was a big difference for me, whereas men were very focused on like what they were experiencing, what can I get from this experience? It was usually very one-sided.
But again, not all men. I mean, I've definitely...
Not all men.
I feel like a lot of men I've been with that are not like that whatsoever. So yeah. I know this is like a generalization too, but I could see like the softer side. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But you know, women can also have like two women having sex with each other can very much have a similar sexual experience, you know, with toys, with added things in the bedroom. You can get very similar and almost exact sensations as you would if it was just a man and a woman. So I think like the physical side, you can recreate. That was never like a big thing for me, because like the actual physical feelings of things were kind of the same.
Interesting. So, you know, like when you're with, even if it's the same sex, but like when you're with two partners, there's a slight difference, but you know, the basic mechanics are the same. Did you feel a huge shift when you went from women to men, or was it kind of just, oh, it's just a different person?
Yeah, I think it was, at least for me, it was just a different person. I think I actually do know the first time I slept with the woman though, I was very like, I actually like watched like some porn first. I was like, what do I do? Like, what is it going to look like down there? Like,
let me study this.
I did some research.
Yeah, because I think the gay men or two men being together is much more visual, and probably goes back to this like external versus internal. Like, I feel like in the media perception, you don't even necessarily, like if you're not in the LGBTQ+ community, I feel like sometimes you don't even know what sex would look like with two women.
Exactly, because we're not shown what it looks like.
Yeah, we're not shown.
You know, we're not ever shown. And if what you do see maybe in porn is like geared towards straight men for the most part.
Right,
you can find
right.
good lesbian porn made maybe by women or other lesbians, but in general, like what you'll see, you know, on Pornhub or whatever the main sites are, like it'll be just very male geared lesbian porn. And that, in my experience, was very rarely what actually happened in the bedroom.
So what does happen? Can you give us any lowdown?
Wow, Julie.
Curious.
Let's go play by play.
Doesn't have to be play by play, but high level.
There's a lot of tongue action, and there's a lot of finger action.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Gosh, did you more detail than that?
I can only imagine. I mean, it's basically like anything that would stimulate you, just bring it on. You just, all of it.
Scissoring was a thing. Like you like, you know, rub up on each other. Like I said, fingers are a big one. That's like your dick is your hand, your fingers. and then lots of tongue. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
And then toys. And then depending on the couple, they bring in a lot of toys.
Yeah. Well, toys are good. Always a good idea.
Yeah.
No matter what. Julie, do you have any more?
My burning questions out.
Do you want to ask like what happens after? Like,
I think my imagination could go from there. Thank you.
What is some, I'm going to bring this back to just, let's just wrap up before we get in into some takeaways is, what is some advice you would give to people who may be going through this identity shift and they're mm-hmm. going through what you identified when you came out in high school and then when you dated a straight man? It's kind of like, what is happening? Why is there so much confusion? What would you say to someone who's going through that?
Yeah, I would say just be kind to yourself and be open. Like, just if you're having certain thoughts about your identity, whether it's your sexuality or gender, like, just explore that. And my biggest piece of advice is that there are resources out there. Like, Google is your friend. There are so many places to learn about these identities, and they're not, you know, there are communities out there that will help you through it, mm-hmm. whether it's Reddit and TikTok, like, use your community of friends, like TV, HBO has some great shows. There's definitely resources out there for people. And I think that was what I used a lot of, was like TV shows. I used the internet a lot to help me. And then also just talking about it. And I think, you know, I understand that it would be hard for a lot of people because maybe they live in areas that they can't talk about what's going on, because it's definitely not something that you want to talk about. So to that, I say just like, I don't know. I mean, explore, use Google, move somewhere that's a little bit more liberal and open-minded. That might help.
Move.
Just move. Get out of there. I did. I mean, I grew up in San Diego, and, you know, San Diego is a wonderful place, but it's definitely a little bit more close-minded in my experience. So I moved to San Francisco when I was 17 right away.
Yeah, that was a good decision.
Yeah.
Have you thought, I'm sure you've thought about this, how you're going to raise your daughter so that she stays open to all of this?
Yes. I mean, that's actually something I think about almost every day. It's like, you know, how can I tell her, like, these, I don't want to be, you know, give her too much information, but I do want to say, like, you know, I don't want to say, look at this, you know, pretty girl on this page. It's look at this pretty person, you know, and it could be whatever they look like. And I think that I'll just try and use more open language, and then also just help guide her however things are kind of turning out. And I think the biggest thing I struggle with is even just like, I'd like to put pink dresses on her. I like to put bows on her. But that's a hard one for me, especially hard. Like, as I'm studying, you know, philosophy, is like, where is that line of like, how do I continue to be really progressive and open-minded and like teach her that things aren't black and white? But also, like, I still live, you know, I receive presents. I work day to day. There's things on TV that she's going to see. So
yeah.
I don't think I have a clear answer, but I'll just kind of navigate it day by day and hope I do the right thing.
That's why I hate gender reveal parties, because it's so binary.
I know. I called ours a genital reveal party, because really what you want to know.
That's way better, though. Yeah.
That's what you're looking for, right? Is what my baby's genitals are. So we called it a genital review. Yeah.
That is so great. But I think it's a language. It's a, I'm watching the way I speak, and I've seen my friends raise their kids, and they do the whole, like, I have dolls and trucks for you to play with. You choose whatever. And some days they choose one over the other. It doesn't matter. My other friend's son, who's like 6 years old, wanted to wear an Elsa dress to school. And he's like, great, go for it. And now he wears that dress once a week because he loves it so much. And none of the kids make fun of him because it's sort of normalized
accepted,
now.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think we're making so much progress. Yes, it's going to create confusion with the grandparents, but after they die off, I think we're in good hands.
Yes. I agree.
That's the takeaway. The future is pansexual once that generation is gone. Only until then, the future will be not pansexual.
Yeah.
Well, that is a good segue to real takeaways. But I think the biggest one that I had from all of this is that nothing is forever. Mm-hmm. I think this is with identity, whether it's your sexuality, whether this is, you know, where you are in life. Like, I think we need to stay open to the change and not feel like it's a phase or we're stuck in something forever because that's how we've identified. And I think it can be really hard. And I think it's easier said than done. Sometimes moving to that next phase, whether that's, you know, opening up your sexuality or just moving into a different life stage, can feel really daunting because you're used to something, but it's embracing the change and all the good that can come with it. And not, I guess, brings me to the second takeaway I have, is not boxing us into one thing. I think that's the biggest thing. And again, does it, it could be sexuality, but it could even be gender identity. Like, I feel like we need to stop with this girls wear pink, boys wear blue, girls play with dolls, boys play with trucks. Like, I think that's really good that we're just exposing people to all elements of their personality and not putting people in a box just because of historic times that are quite frankly outdated. And it's also, it's like, how do we, and I kind of heard this from your, like, the gender reveal and like some of the stuff that you're going through with your daughter. It's like, how do we balance the traditions that we want to keep and preserve, but also stay open-minded that the world is changing and be progressive in how we view people and how we view identity, and we don't cling necessarily to old things just because we should, but rather to traditions because we want to.
Yeah. I love that. I had a very similar takeaway as you, Julie, which is, I think that we negatively talk about phases. Oh, it's just a phase, just a phase. When life is a series of fucking phases.
Yeah.
We're always going through a phase. And I think it's a good thing. I think we can normalize phases. Right now, I'm a straight woman in a hetero relationship, but that could be a phase. Like, that could all change. I'm not going to be tied to that. And I don't think we need to be tied to any of it, because that's what is instigating oppression, is when we get tied to the way things should be, to the way people should be. That's when we get oppressive, right? So I think phases is a good thing. Let's normalize it. If you're going through a phase, good for you. Good for you. My second takeaway from all of this is that I think we just need to pause before we make these generalizations or statements or conclusions. More often than not, you actually don't know why you're saying the things that you do. They did this whole gender study back in the day of this baby. I think I've talked about it on this podcast. It's a baby next to a Jack in the Box, and the Jack in the Box would come out and the baby would start crying. And they told some participants that the baby was a boy, some participants that the baby was a girl, and they asked, why did the baby cry? And the ones that thought it was a boy said, oh, he was angry. And the ones that thought it was a girl said she was scared. So these are the things that, like, we have no basis of all this.
Right.
It's just what we've been fed in society. So the best we can do right now is just take a pause before we speak or form a thought. And then we can go from there. I think just taking that pause will go a long way for all of us.
Yeah, I think rethinking the feminine and masculine too. I mean, that's like another whole conversation for another day. But I feel like that whole piece, like, it just puts us in that box so much. And what we've said today is, people are people. And that's the beauty of pansexual. It's falling for the person as a person. And maybe, hey, it opens up your pool of prospects significantly. So
I sure
significantly.
Does.
It really I think does. The future is pansexual. I really do.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
I love that.
Any closing remarks or anything that you took away? I know this is like your day to day, but like anything that you've gathered from this convo, Genesis?
Yeah. What did you learn from us?
Yeah.
Other than Julie loves sex questions.
I know.
Yeah, I needed the deets.
You know, I think it's always just reaffirming. It kind of like, we're all always learning about ourselves day to day, and I'm continuously learning about myself. And I think just having patience and like kindness for people that might be going through something or you know, entering a new phase or entering a new, you know, version of themselves that they previously didn't know was possible. Just like really having kind of that empathy for each other, I think will go a long way and push us towards our future of pansexuality.
Very well
Love
said.
It. Yes.
Very well said. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey. I had known just a tiny moment of it. I didn't get the full picture. So now I'm so happy that I've heard the full story. And your husband is fantastic. I can attest to that. Yes. He is a very kind person. For all of our listeners, if you would like to share your story about a journey you're going through, especially when it comes to gender and sexuality, we would love to have you as a guest on our show, because we can only highlight one person's story at a time. So the more we highlight, the more diversity of stories we can get. And we recognize not anybody can represent the entire gender, the entire sexuality, but at least you can represent your story, and that is your story to tell. If you want to submit to be a guest on our show, just go to datablepodcast.com. While you're on the internet, just head to Apple Podcasts, give us 5-star reviews, write a little nice blurb or so. You know, it's not hard at all, and it takes 5 seconds, but it really helps us because it builds trust between us and our guests. So someone like Genesis can come on our show and say, I trust these girls. I'm going to tell them my story and I'm going to reveal everything except for what Julie wants to know.
No. She's like, it stops at one point.
Yeah. There's a line. I will draw a line. But we do really appreciate those reviews. They do do us a lot of good for our show. So with that, shall we wrap this up?
Let's do it.
Stay dateable.
The Dateable Podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.
Want to continue the conversation? First, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter with the handle @DateablePodcast. Tag us in any post with the hashtag #StayDateable, and trust us, we look at all of those posts. Then head over to our website, datablepodcast.com. There you'll find all the episodes as well as articles, videos, and our coaching service with vetted industry experts. You can also find our premium Why series where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We're also downloadable for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher Radio, and other podcast platforms. Your feedback is valuable to us, so don't forget to leave us a review. And most importantly, remember to stay dateable.